Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
It's interesting because in the early days, I fought so against being a rural artist. I tried to find ways to make my work be a little cutting edge, but it was so not true to who I was and where I was. I finally realized that that was craziness. I didn't live in New York, you know. I mean, I had to finally face my truth and know, which is why I really started to paint the landscape, because I said, this is really what I know and really who I am.
Friends, I am delighted to welcome Michelle Johnson to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Michelle is an artist living and working in northern New Hampshire, United States. She is a retired high school art teacher, and her love for the land inspires her work. Michelle's majestic paintings of trees evoke a sense of reverence and wonder and nod to the magic that exists beneath the surface of the landscape. She is represented by Wren Gallery and Fiddleheads Gallery, both in New Hampshire, and her work is part of many established museum collections, including the Rochester Museum of Fine Art. Michelle is the mother to three grown sons and the grandmother to three kiddos. I'm delighted to welcome Michelle to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Thank you so much, Michelle, for being here.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Kaylin.
Of course. It's been a long time coming, my friend.
Yeah. No, it's exciting.
Yes.
I've been loving listening to your podcasts.
Oh,
I've really
good.
Been enjoying them.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start way back in your childhood. Can you tell me something about your childhood that sort of inspired or that you feel connected you to your path as an artist?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, like all artists, I did start as a child drawing and just creating and art making. I went to a Catholic school where I was the one that the nuns called on to, you know, do the bulletin boards and any other art projects. You know, I was that go-to person. My dad encouraged my art making because he, unfortunately, it always kind of made me sad that he never pursued it, but he really had wonderful art talent. And when he was in the service, he would do drawings of, you know, interestingly, pinup girls and send them home to my mother. And it's really kind of funny. But they're you know, exquisitely done.
Oh.
And in fact, those are the few pieces of art that my sisters and I have.
That's amazing.
Even, you know, yeah, yeah. My grandfather, too, his father was also an artist, and we have none of his work, sadly, but the one photograph that exists of him is him sitting at an easel, and my dad had me do a drawing of it that we printed up and gave to the family because it's really the only document of my grandfather. So, so I did do all this as a child. In fact, I still have some of the drawings, like, you know, the portraits of the Beatles, because that was happening then.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, the kind of stuff that all young artists do, you know, when you get into drawing an eye and, you know, back then it was kind of glamour girls with the bouffant hair cuts and, So, you know, so that's how it began. But I mean, my career really later on, because I married so young. I was 19 when we got married. So I was just a year out of high school. I did not go to school right out of high school.
You were a hippie and you went up and lived in the woods, right?
I was a hippie. Yeah. You know, and of course, yeah. And back then, you know, parents of my generation didn't necessarily encourage their girls to go to school. Mm. I mean, the mindset of my dad was that I'd get married and a man would take care of me. So sort of what I did besides being a hippie. And, so then we escaped, early on, 1976. Well, prior to that, I had my first child too. I was only 21 when I had Josh.
Wow.
And so that's when we escaped to northern New Hampshire to homestead, so there wasn't a lot of art making going on back in those days. I mean, I had my three sons. By the time I was 26, I had all three of them.
That's amazing.
But I did, what really, I think, got me back into art making. I mean, just to back up a couple steps, before I had Josh, I took an oil painting class and started painting a little bit. But as you probably know, although you make it work somehow, having oil paints around with little ones, wasn't working well. And I didn't have a studio, so
I paint with acrylic.
I started. You do? Okay. Mm-hmm. But even paint, having paint around with little ones, So I did a lot of crafting back then, as a way to stay engaged with art making, from crocheting to beadwork to quilting and weaving. I mean, I kind of did almost all that stuff. And it was stuff that I could do with the kids around my feet. Mm-hmm. I could sit in a chair and be doing that kind of work. And then what really got me more onto a career path was learning how to do calligraphy.
Interestingly,
because, when people noticed that I had this skill, and of course, this is before we had word processing on a computer, people started to ask me to do things, wedding invitations, posters, things like that. So I started in a little corner of my bedroom, and then my husband did build me a studio.
Amazing.
And I made an attempt at making a living. I mean, up in northern New Hampshire, it's tough. I mean, I live in a little town with 2,500 people.
And do you live in the same town that you've lived the whole time since you moved there when you were 20 or whatever?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yes. Same town, same house. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. And you guys have a bunch of land, right? How many acres do you have?
We've got 13 and a half acres.
Okay.
Primarily wooded acres. Mm-hmm. And my husband is a retired mechanic. So he had built a garage to do mechanicking. And he kind of eventually had three bays. So we turned the very first bay that he built into my art studio.
Oh, so cool.
So I moved into there and just tried to cobble together some kind of art business, doing, almost everything that you could think of commercially imaginable. I mean, I painted signs, I did logos, I worked for the Tilly Balloon Company, which was part of the Balsams Grand Resort up here, and I did all their balloon designs. I did framing. So anything that I could possibly think of, and I really taught myself how to do all that stuff.
That's
and back then, of course, nothing was done using Photoshop and everything was hand done. So when I did any kind of design work, it was using Rubylith and texture films. And, you had to hand separate every color.
Oh, my gosh. and no
crazy
marketing, no internet marketing. So this is all just word of mouth and this small
of
community
course
supporting you.
Sure. Business cards and a little ad in the paper.
Yeah.
You know?
That's incredible.
And word of mouth, like you said. Yeah.
So can you tell me what your work looks like now in case somebody listening has not seen it? And maybe you could talk about the transition from that art career to sort of what you're known for and what you've been painting now for however long, decades maybe.
Yeah, sure. I do struggle to describe, especially my current work, because I hesitate to say I'm a landscape painter because then it conjures images of pastoral scenes with a barn or a seascape. And I suppose originally I started that way, although I was always interested in how to make it relevant in a contemporary world. And then, of course, doing the MFA program along with you really forced me to delve a lot deeper into why, you know, besides the fact that I'm surrounded by all this beauty, what more can I say about it and what's my relationship to it? And so the work has evolved, I think, to describe my thoughts about what's happening kind of underneath the surface, that communication that I've become so interested in between trees. You know, there's such amazing things, living things. So the new work has a lot of underpainting that I attempt to describe my thoughts about that communication that happens, you know, under the surface. So there's a lot of color. I mean, I'm still interested always in color and form and light. I mean, that was my early interest, I think, was just how does the light lie on the objects in the natural world? And what does the light do to the shadows and the forms? So that all gets kind of combined. But, I'm always kind of thinking about how I can push it further, too. So I don't know what's going to happen.
I love hearing you talk about your work.
But hopefully it always... Thanks. Thanks. And, I'm interested in it moving forward. You know, you don't want to get stuck, which is so exciting about engaging in a master's program, you know?
Yes. So I feel like I should backtrack and say that we are dear friends because you and I were...
Yes, we are.
We were enrolled in our MFA program at the same time. We both ended up at this MFA program in the middle of the Northeast in Manchester, New Hampshire at... New Hampshire Institute of Art. It was a low-res program, so we came together twice a year for 10 or 12 days. And I just remember, you know, like connecting with you and feeling like you were my only friend for a while in the program. And, you know, just sharing sort of the trials of the program and going through it together. You were such a gift and such a dear friend to me. And so anyway, I want to talk to you though, like about your experience in the MFA program, just because we came at it at such different times in our life. Right.
Yes.
And even I was late to the party and I was, how old was I when I enrolled? Like 29 maybe?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
You know, I wasn't
that old. Yeah.
I wasn't fresh out of undergrad, like a 22 year old.
Right.
And you were on the verge of retiring from a career as an art teacher. So, you know, just interested to hear your perspective, like how old were you when you entered the MFA program and what, like, why? Why did you do it at that point in your life?
Yeah. I know. So crazy. I mean, you know, even my whole career in academia was kind of crazy because, of course, there's no college here.
Yeah.
The nearest college is an hour away in a couple directions. One's a community college, one is a state college. And my kids were little, but I wanted so much to go back to school and get an education and really develop a career. So, of course, I was teaching we graduated in 2017. So I think I was 62 when I started. Yeah, I think I was 62 when I enrolled in the MFA. And it's funny, I had right before then, I took a trip with a bunch of my gal pals to Europe. We went to Paris and Amsterdam, and the last night together, I don't know what brought it up, but we somehow I confided in them that I really wanted to go back to school to get a master's. Mm. I was sort of waiting on NHIA to develop their master's program, I guess because I had some sense of comfort there because I had taken a lot of I had attended a lot of art education institutes there, mm-hmm. and they were always great fun, and I knew some of the professors, so there was a level of comfort. So finally, when they, you know, began that program, I guess it took me a year or two to jump on board, but I was nervous as hell. I remember talking to Allison and saying, am I too old to be doing this, you know? And she reassured me that I wasn't. And she actually connected me with Ella Carlson because we must be in kind of the same age group. Mm. And we talked a little bit. So, you know, I thought, well, okay, I'm doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the best parts of the program for me was being connected to people of all ages, you know, yeah. like you in your 60s about to retire and
yeah.
people fresh out of undergrad and people like me where I'm kind of like in the middle,
yeah.
like early middle of my career, but I'm, you know, still slaying babies and doing yeah. all that crazy stuff. And, you know, there were so many people in just all different kind of
yes.
points. That was kind of the beauty of the program is it was accessible
yeah.
no matter what point in your life you were in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And it was so, I was so delighted to have you befriend me even. And I thought, why does this young, lovely gal want to
oh my
be
gosh,
with
I was
me?
Like,
I'm an old lady.
Why does this like wealth of wisdom and cool hippie woman want to be my friend? I don't know. My favorite memory with you, Michelle, and we have some good ones, but do
yeah.
you remember we rode, there was some long bus ride we rode together. I think we were going to Peterborough, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And we rode back together, I think, from an exhibition, and we had about an hour-long bus ride. And that's when you shared about, yeah, like when I was 19, I moved to the woods, and I was a hippie,
yes.
and, you know. We did. And it was just so delightful to hear sort of that background and how your career, you know, kind of
yeah.
was built up and how
mm-hmm.
you you know, we're devoted to your kids at that time. And
yeah,
it's really inspiring.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your time in the MFA program. What do you feel like that really offered you? Like, did your work change much? And
yeah.
Did you feel pushed?
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. For sure. I mean, you probably know because we had discussions about this all the time. And you know what my first residency was like? I was in tears that first day because
yeah.
I got slammed
yeah.
for doing things like
signing
my work on the front and painting on the sides. And
yeah.
who knew? You know, who knew these things?
Yep.
So
I'll
oh
never
my gosh.
Forget that. Like,
oh, yeah.
This is so funny.
Yeah, yeah. So that was awful. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, what am I doing here? But, you know, at the end of the day, it was, I have such great memories and such fondness, really, as much as we complained about a lot mm-hmm. of stuff that was going on. My work would never have gone to the places that it's gone had I not been pushed. And I think you'd agree that we had some great instructors and some
yeah.
great people. And I had some great mentors that just constantly pushed, where else can this work go? And, you know, having me always ask the question, why, you know, why am I doing this? What, besides being attracted to the natural beauty of the landscape, you know, what else does it mean for me? And you know, at that time, too, the Northern Pass, which was a big hydroelectric project that was coming in from Quebec and going to really devastate this northern part of the state, we were in the middle of fighting that as I was going through the program.
Yeah. That's right.
So it really forced me to think about what my role as an artist was, you know, and I mean, I think we always think about that as artists, or we certainly should be. What's our responsibility as artists? You know, now we're thinking about that, I'm sure, in this crazy time that we're living in. Like, do I have a responsibility? What is my responsibility? So, you know, as the residencies went on, that started to enter the work. And I started to think about how can I state in the work what's going on in the place that I live, you know, and how I feel about it and how my fellow community members feel about what's going on. And ultimately, my thesis, you know, addressed that. Even though it was in kind of a minor way, I think what I came to realize working with the mentors and with the instructors was to make it a little broader, because we did touch a little bit on, you know, the whole idea of climate change and what's happening to the environment, so that the work could touch a broader audience, not just if you knew about Northern Pass and were engaged in that, but we all know what's happening to the planet that we live on.
Right.
And
I mean,
the danger that it's in.
I think both you and I kind of came into the MFA program like, we want to know how to make pretty paintings, or we do make pretty paintings and we want to know how to make them better. And then, you know, we were kind of just like, whoa, wait, we have to like interject something we care about into the work,
right,
and make it meaningful and personal.
Right.
And, I mean, I remember you and I even resisting that, like just kind of saying like, I don't want to just, you know, put my breast milk on my painting just to call it meaningful or whatever. Like,
you know,
I remember us having these like, well, just because somebody uses their blood doesn't mean it, you know, or whatever, but
exactly.
But I do.
Yeah, like,
I
why
do.
Why can't you paint for painting's sake? I mean, I know that was a big question, especially since we were faced with this idea that painting is dead. You know, people aren't painting anymore. Everybody's doing conceptual work. Can't the reason that you're doing it be that you like to move a brush around, you know, you love
and it can be
qualities.
I think we both learned that it can be, but why go to an MFA program if that's all you want to do, you know?
I
think both of you and I both realized like, oh yeah, we really do want to do more than that. You know, we do care about maybe, you know, the sort of the meaning behind why people make art and why we are compelled to make it and how it can connect to these broader ideas and this idea of art being, you know, political and and personal and publicly engaging and all of these things that I think you and I both believe about art. I think it was at the beginning, it's like, well, but our art doesn't have to be like that. But the reason that we didn't want our art to be like that is because we didn't know how to make it like that, you know?
Exactly.
And that's why we went into the program, I guess,
even though we
didn't know that until the end, I don't think.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. It's so true.
Yeah.
True.
It's nice to like flesh this out with you because I haven't thought about this for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's great to talk to you about it, too, because I don't often, you know, again, living in this little community, there isn't a lot of that kind of engaging discussion, you know.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. I wanted to drop in and share a bit more about our community and the many ways you can get involved. We post daily on Instagram at Artist Mother Podcast, sharing work from artists in our community and photos from our interviewed guests, plus inspiring takeovers and lots more. Use our hashtag ArtistMotherCo so we can find your work and see this community continue to expand. We have other more tangible ways for you to connect too. Our Crit Group program offers space for you to partner with a mentor and a small group of women artists to receive feedback on your work and get lots of support. We have yearly retreats for more intentional time spent in community. Picture a long weekend away with artist mama friends, taking in scenic nature and rest, learning opportunities like workshops, and of course, lots of time to talk. We're also always scheming ways for you to share your work outside of our community, and we have put together exhibitions for you multiple times a year. We believe in your work so much, and we want you to feel as supported as possible. Check out our offerings on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com. We even have t-shirts available in our webshop so you can represent our community. And if you appreciate what we're doing here, we would love to hear from you. iTunes reviews are greatly appreciated and help others hear about us. Thank you so much for listening, for connecting, and working together with us to create a beautiful network of artists and mothers. So I want to talk about your community, but first I want to talk to you a little bit more about your work and how you feel like, how you have been motivated to sort of, I don't know, interject some of your feelings about climate change and the landscape and these big, these big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just like break down some of what you're inspired to paint and how, you know, you feel, how you feel about the work and the state of the land right now? Mm-hmm. Like, what are your concerns?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. Well,
it's a heavy question.
It is a heavy question. And, you know, without getting too political, because of the political scene, I'm super worried about what's going to happen, you know, to our beautiful country, really, mm-hmm. let alone the whole world. And I guess in part, I feel, you know, just like a photographer, as I paint my landscape, I'm preserving it. You know, if something does happen to it, it's been preserved at least in a painting, in a visual piece.
Mm-hmm.
I just read Over story by Richard Powers. I don't know if you've read it.
I've read the first essay, the one about the generations of photographers photographing the tree. Isn't that the very
first one?
Well,
there's a novel. It's a novel by Richard Powers.
Okay. Well, I read the first section and then I kind of put it down, but I want to come back to it.
Yeah, go back to it because, I mean, it's a novel about the land. And, well, it's funny because it does have a hippie bent to it, too. but there's a lot of factual stuff that he includes about trees as amazing, you know, as amazing things and the way that they do communicate. So I'm really fascinated by that, which, you know, to go back to my inspiration, I mean, that's certainly inspiration. And as you pointed out, trees play a big part in a lot of my paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because they're beautiful, but I'm learning because they are amazing creatures. And how do they affect me in terms of the way they communicate? And, you know, of course, I live in the middle of a forest, mm-hmm. really. So how can I not be affected by those things, you know, by those trees?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I'm certainly worried. I mean, here, whenever I see a piece of land being clear cut, it worries me. Thankfully we were able to fight off that Northern Pass.
Yeah,
project.
Which is amazing.
It is really amazing considering that we live in this tiny town, in this region with so few people. Mm-hmm. It's incredible that we were able to fight off this massive corporation that poured millions upon millions of dollars into trying to get this thing through. I mean, they would have been cutting swaths through our scene, through mm-hmm. our scenery, you know, and putting up these massive towers. So, you know, we were able to fight that. So I have hope that as human beings, we can fight whatever devastation is, you know, looking to come our way. Mm. So I don't know, as an artist, I don't know, you know, I don't know what I can do besides paint these pictures of the land to bring it to everybody's attention. I don't know. I guess I'm still thinking about that, you know?
I think you are engaged and you are making work that is inspiring people to consider, you know, not only the beauty of the landscape, but the meaning of it and how we can protect it. And Michelle, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what it's like to live so rurally and, you know, feel maybe a little bit disconnected from, you know, a major art center. I think your closest big city is Boston, but that's still hours away, right? And then, you know, so what has that been like, sort of cobbling together a career, being literally being out in the woods?
Yeah, I mean, it's frankly been tough. It's always been a struggle, really. I mean, from the beginning, I was, you know, I had been, you know, trying to create arts organizations. So there have been a couple that have come and gone. I'm on the board of the Connecticut River Artisans Group, which is the current art organization here. I'm sitting right now at the Tillotson Center for the Arts. I'm on the board there and on the gallery committee there. I'm on the gallery committee at Wren. So wherever I can insert myself, I do. And it's, you know, in terms of my own personal career and being corrected, I'm connected. That is a terrible struggle because, you know, I'm always thinking, how can artists like myself in these rural communities make our voices heard? What can we do to make the art world in capital letters, know us and recognize us and really see the importance? Because I feel like we play such a role because, you know, as an educator, I felt my main duty was to make people aware and appreciative of the arts, and make them connected to their own creativity. So that was really my passion and my job, I felt like, you know, as...
I think you and I, that was something we also connected on in our MFA program, was sort of this push against the New York centric, you know, like all artists are from New York and all the good artists move to New York and spend a few years there and retire in the Hudson Valley. And, you know, you know, I think that's something that you and I were like, why do they keep bringing New York artists? There's lots of good artists from, you know, Tennessee or all these other places they should be bringing in to talk about at our program. And and to their credit, there were lots of amazing artists that we got to interact with who were New York, you know, Gabby and Jason and all these people that we loved. But I do think that it is something that, you know, I feel like there's a lot of truth to what you're saying about, it's like artists who live rurally almost feel like second-class citizens, you know, in the art world. Like, which is, it just does such a disservice to this idea of artists being humans who are involved, you know, as I've said before, on a political level, on a global level, people who are integrated into communities. If artists are supposed to be, you know, these liberal left-wing nuts who only live in these bubbles in New York City, like how is that, you know, that's not, that doesn't fit like the vision that the art world wants everybody to believe, I don't think.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. And it's interesting because in the early days, I fought so against being a rural artist. Mm-hmm. I tried to find ways to make my work be a little cutting edge. But it was so not true to who I was and mm-hmm. where I was. I finally realized that that was craziness. Mm-hmm. I didn't live in New York, you know. I mean, I had to finally face my truth and know, which is why I really started to paint the landscape yeah. because I said, this is really what I know and really who I am. To try to pretend like I can be avant-garde and, you know,
right.
is crazy, you know, it's crazy. And so I feel like I finally became who I was meant to be as an artist, you know, mm-hmm. And then that was why that was a little fight, I think, with, you know, being in the MFA program, because just doing landscape, I felt like wasn't being appreciated and acknowledged, really. Mm-hmm. So I had to fight that a bit. I felt like I fought that a bit, as you know.
Yeah, and you're a mom on top of that. You're a woman. You're a mom.
Right.
So you're
right.
like a right. landscape painter.
And old, too.
You're not from New York. you've got a few years on you. You're a mom. You're a grandma. You've got all the cards against you, Michelle.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I love that about you, though. And you're still painting. You're doing it.
Well, I'm going to do it, you know, till the day I die.
That's right.
And,
I hope so, too. So let's talk about motherhood a little bit mm-hmm. and grandmotherhood. I know, you know, your work it's not like you've ever painted about motherhood, maybe necessarily, but do you feel like your work has been influenced by your role as a mom?
Well, you know, it's so interesting. Again, going back to those days when I was pushing against painting landscape, I remember painting with a friend, Janice Kaufman, who's a wonderful artist that lives here. And we were going to put together a show that reflected our life as homemakers and mothers.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
Yeah. Only one piece really came out of that. And in fact, Zach has it, and it's a big colored pencil piece of my sink full of dirty dishes.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So we were going to do vacuums, and I had a lot of sketches and ideas that never really materialized, but that was, you know, it certainly was something that I thought about, but I think even that I pushed against I love the work that you're doing and the work that you're doing with this podcast, because you're bringing your motherhood into your work, which is so important and so real for you. You know, I didn't really do that back then.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I probably should have more, because it would have been more authentic and real to me, you know?
At the time, did it just feel like another thing that would be held against you?
I think it did.
Yeah.
I think it did. You know, and yeah, you know, and especially back then. I mean, now as young mother painters, you can really, you know, we've come so far so that we can acknowledge that being a mother is important, and you can have a career and be a mother. And, you know, back when I did it, not so much.
Yeah.
You know, not so much. So.
Yeah.
So I think that I spent more time kind of fighting against that in a way than bringing it into the work.
What kind of role models did you have, Michelle? Did you know any practicing artists back then?
There were a couple, yes. And I just mentioned Janice Kaufman, who was a mother and a wonderful painter. It's funny, since then she sort of have given up painting, but yeah, she was really one of my early role models. I mean, she had been to art school. I think her degree was in art history, but she was a much better artist than I was and did some amazing work. So she was an early role model. Ellen Mankin, who is an artist friend who lives in Upper New York State, who was an amazing artist. She actually was the one that introduced me to calligraphy and a couple of early things that I did, like soft sculpture. I was doing back in those. She introduced me to weaving, and she's a wonderful artist. So I'm only in touch via Facebook with her now. Nice. But so those were two early role models for sure.
Nice. And then you ended up raising, at least I know one of your kids is now a full-time artist, right?
He is.
Zach is a full-time artist?
He is a full-time artist. In fact, he's currently working up in this neck of the woods on a massive, you might have seen it, I posted some stuff on Facebook.
I did see it. It looks great.
Yeah, that massive mural. So, yeah, he's working as an artist and working as an artist up in northern New Hampshire, which I find incredible, but he's made quite a name for himself. So,
and I saw that you were working on the mural with him, which is so cool. Like,
it's such a delight, you know, to work alongside my son is the best, yeah. Of course, you know, I only have a minor role in that. I mean, I've offered more work and hopefully he brings me in a little bit more. Cause I mean, it's incredible. He's really working on this crazy big mural.
It looks huge.
Single-handedly. It's crazy. It's the size of it is nuts.
Yeah.
Especially you do it on your own. So here and there I've been, you know, trying to help him out a little, but that's all him for sure.
Tell me what it's been like to raise an artist, because not only are you an artist, but you also had this like quote unquote more stable career as an art teacher. But has Zach always been freelance? I know he lived in Seattle for a while or in the Pacific Northwest. So like, tell me a little bit about that, what it's been like to raise an artist and, you know, just have you had concerns or has it been just like completely delightful or?
I don't know if I've had concerns. I mean, of course, they were always around me art making.
Right.
So actually, all three of them, I mean, even my youngest, Blake, went to school as a graphic design major. He's since become an IT guy.
Okay.
So he's very talented, doesn't do a lot of art making, unfortunately. I wish he would. And then my oldest went into construction, but he was also very artistic and has done some furniture making and stuff. So Zach's the only one that's made a career, but he went to Mass Art in Boston.
Okay.
And pretty quickly found his way. He started a company called Tank Theory with somebody that he graduated with, and it was largely an apparel company where, you know, he did the designs for the apparel and, you know, they did other merchandise and stuff like that. And that was pretty successful. I mean, as you, I'm sure, know, it's always a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, it's always a struggle. He's working for himself, which, you know, you just never know.
Yeah.
I mean, my only concern really has been he moved from Oregon up to the Northeast. As you know, lived with us for a little while and then got his own place. And now he's moved about an hour south of us into, you know, a larger town with more opportunity for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was very concerned when he moved with us. I thought, how on earth is he ever going to do this? Because I know what my struggle was.
Yeah. How do you make a living as an artist?
How do you? Yeah. But of course, you know, we've got the internet now.
Yep.
So
And we're scrappy. Right.
And he already had a lot of connections.
Good.
So he was able to keep those connections. And then, you know, he was able to get some work locally. He loves doing murals, so he did some of that work and Yeah,
it's cool. It's just interesting to think about you having your own art life and career, but then also raising an artist and like thinking about the interaction and support that you can give him. And then I know he also has a kiddo, right? So you've also been able to bring your granddaughter, you know, into, has she spent any time in your studio? Does she know that you're an artist?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Of course. And she knows when she sees one of my paintings.
Oh yeah.
You know, she knows it's grandma's for sure.
That's awesome.
And, yeah, it's been interesting because we've just had her, you know, what it's like now with
COVID.
This crazy stuff going on. And so she's in a hybrid situation. And my daughter-in-law is working in the school. So she had started before my granddaughter did. And Zach is working up here. So we've been kind of taking care of my granddaughter a little bit. So that's kind of been interesting too. So I'm kind of thrown back into childcare again, you know? So that's
So what, tell me a little bit about retiring, because you retired last year.
Yes.
This summer was your first summer off. So
yeah.
I'm interested to hear, you know, like now that you've retired from being an art teacher, like what, I mean, I know COVID has made everything crazy, but just wondering about your plans. What are your, some of your dreams? Were you excited to have more time to focus on your work or, you know, just interested to hear about that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I put in for retirement pre-COVID, so I didn't know what was going to go on. And I'm kind of so relieved that I didn't have to go back to it because I'm sure it would have been a challenge.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny, being an educator for so long, I do miss it, I have to say, because there's so much teaching in me. You know, I have so many, I mean, I look at a lot, not only do I look at the world as an artist, but also as an educator. So I'm always, as I look at things, think, oh gosh, the kids would have a great time doing that.
Yeah.
Or I could develop a lesson around this or that. So I was kind of feeling sad about it actually, but, I've kind of spent the summer devising what is next really. And I haven't completely given up educating. I'm thinking about how to do some private classes. And in fact, I did do one class with a colleague of mine, and it was great fun and ended up having, I was thinking we were going to have a lot of kids, but we ended up with almost all adults.
That's
and we
awesome.
Did some, we did some mask making, and that was great fun. And then I got asked to teach in a little private school. So I'm back to teaching one day a week, one afternoon a week with three kiddos, fifth and sixth graders, and I just started yesterday, and that was a lot of fun. Wow. So I'm going to have my hand in it a bit.
Yeah. You just can't let it go.
I can't quite let it go, Kaylin. Yeah, I can't. So, but it is great having more time, and it's interesting. It's just interesting what the universe kind of brings to you.
It's
funny because I've been concerned with making some money still as an artist. And of course, with galleries sort of shut down, shows are sort of, you know, gone by the wayside. And I don't know how you feel. I'm not that interested in online shows. I mean, I've done them before. They're certainly not as exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends sort of on what they can offer you. Like if you're looking to, like, I think if you're a younger artist and you're looking to add exhibitions to your CV, you know, to build up, like, I think it is great. It's like good exposure.
Yeah.
But I could see how, like, if you're kind of like, what does it offer me, you know, at this point, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know. I wanted to ask you too, like, what are some of the big things that you want, you know, to have happen for your career? Like, what are some dreams that you have? And, you know, what are some, even some big art pieces? Like, is there anything that you really want to try or some things that you've been scheming up?
Well, it's interesting, you know, that installation that I did for my thesis, I have other ideas for it, and I'm so itching to show it somewhere. So I keep looking for ways to show that. That's so difficult, you know, offering up an installation is a tricky one. But
yeah,
I'd
it is.
Love
it's
to
almost
do...
like you have to have a place to install it so that you can pitch
it. Yeah. Yeah,
right?
You do.
Yeah.
You really do. But that is definitely on my bucket list.
Mm.
You know, and residencies, you know, I'm always bookmarking these. In fact, I just saw something from Submittable. You probably are on that site too. And there was a residency in New York somewhere. So I've got that bookmarked and
nice.
I may apply for that. So I'd love to do some residencies for sure. And I'm always looking for gallery shows. You know, I want to show at Gagosian. Yeah, that's
you know,
just a minor dream. I mean, you know, what's wrong with that?
I could see it happening for you, Michelle. I could. This has been so nice to catch up with you and hear about your life and your work, friend.
Oh, thanks. It's such a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah.
Love to hear your voice.
I have 5 questions that we close with just to end the interview. I ask these of everybody.
Sure.
So can you tell me, who's your biggest art crush?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think there's so many. It's so hard. You know, I was thinking about that. And, you know, I mean, of course, we go back to classics like Van Gogh always makes me cry.
Yes.
I mean, but that's maybe so cliched. But I'm loving Yayoi Kusama. It's funny. Mm. People that don't necessarily relate to my work.
Oh,
but
I can see how she relates to your work.
Oh, gosh. Her color and the installation. She's so wacky. I just watched a documentary. If you haven't seen it, I think it's called Infinity.
Yes.
Yes.
It's on my list.
Did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet, but it's on my list.
Yeah, it's great. She's so nutty and wacky. So I think she's my latest art crush, you know. But I love, you know, I'm drawn to contemporary art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, you know, a lot that's not directly related, but Nick Cave's work and his sound suits are fabulous. And I love Kehinde Wiley's work, which relates probably a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I always look to the Group of Seven and Emily Carr and for their lovely landscape work. And, of course, Georgia O'Keeffe is another favorite. But
you pick some good ones.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay.
Who doesn't love them?
Michelle, what is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Oh, gosh, no contest, Italy, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there a couple times. And once Rick and I went to Venice. It was for our 35th anniversary. And I had no idea. Don't ask me how this escaped me, but I had no idea that the Biennale was there that year.
Oh, wow.
So when I saw the sign, I thought, oh, what? We're here for the Biennale. So... It was crazy.
You really knew. You just didn't want to tell Rick.
I don't know. How did I not know that? It's so crazy. How did that get past my radar? But we were there for that. So I'd love to go back again. And Venice is one of my favorite cities that I've had the privilege of traveling to. Mm. But, you know, I'd love to go to Peru and Machu Picchu and Easter Island. That's on my bucket list, too.
Nice.
So... When COVID's
when COVID's over, it's all gonna happen.
You can travel,
What film or book has inspired you greatly?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to that Overstory by Richard Powers. I mean, that's one of my inspirations. I'm reading now an interesting. It's called Old in Art School by Nell Painter.
Mm.
And I just started reading that. It's a memoir. And she went back and got art degrees kind of at the same point in life that I did.
Oh,
so
that's
it's
cool.
Really, really interesting reading about her experience. So that's what I'm into currently.
That's awesome. Have you read anything by Robin Wall Kimmerer?
I haven't. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, the most popular book is called Braiding Sweetgrass. Have you heard of that book?
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, Michelle, you would love this book.
Okay.
It's like indigenous wisdom, and she's just this scholar and environmentalist and just amazing woman, and she talks about the wisdom of plants and how, you know, native people had this knowledge of plants that, you know, contemporary society doesn't honor and respect, and how we have so much to learn from plants and from the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh.
Yeah, you would love it. It'd be right up your
Sounds great.
Right up your alley.
I've got it on my list.
It's a beautiful read too. It's just very poetic. Mm-hmm. It kind of, you know, just in the same vein of like Annie Dillard or Mary Oliver,
just some
of the writing.
Yes,
it's really, mm-hmm. really good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is your favorite meal?
Oh gosh, my favorite meal. Well, I'm Italian, so it has to be like something Italian, you know, lasagna or something disgusting like that.
Oh, but something delicious like that.
Something horrible.
Bad for your heart, but good for your stomach, right?
Absolutely, and my soul as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, friend, and finally, I'd like to just give an opportunity for you to give a shout out or thank somebody who supported you in your work.
Yeah. Oh gosh. You know, there's really so many. I mean, I've been around a while, so there's so many, but I'd love to give a shout out to my dear friend, Deb Sargent, who is a colleague. She teaches up in this neck of the woods too. And she's bought so much of my work and she supports me so much along the way. So thanks, Deb. And my cousin Doreen Angelillo, I'd love to shout out to her because she has also been a great supporter, loves my work, and has bought countless paintings. Mm. So I'll give a thank you to her too. And thank my husband Rick for building me a beautiful studio that I can work in. And and thank you to you too for your support and for inviting me to do this with you.
It's such a privilege and a pleasure.
Yeah.
My pleasure. Okay. And where can people connect with you if they want to find more about your work?
Yeah, they can go to my website at Michelle with one L Johnson, and that's JOHNSEN.com. And on Instagram, I'm at Johnson Michelle. And on Facebook at Michelle Johnson Fine Artist.
You're well connected. They can find you.
Hey, that's what you got to do now, right?
Yes. Well, thank you, friend. This was so delightful.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Kaylin.
Thanks.
I had a blast.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.